Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking through the Mutual Facilities in Washington, D.C. I'll have the news for you in just a moment.
Here's an important announcement for capable and ambitious young women. The Army is expanding. This means that there are many fine career openings in the Women's Army Corps. If you're between 18 and 34, a high school graduate, single and otherwise qualified, the Women's Army Corps offers you an important, interesting future while serving your country. Women who are anxious to do their full share in helping out the nation's defense effort may volunteer for service today in the Women's Army Corps. 30,000 volunteers are needed. A variety of important assignments is open to young women who can qualify. For complete information concerning enlistment in the WAC, visit your nearest U.S. Army recruiting station. You'll be glad you did. And now in just a moment, Mr. Lewis and the news.
It appears tonight that the controversy over whether General Omar Bradley should or should not have been required to tell about his discussions with President Truman not only have not been settled by the committee vote of yesterday, but on the contrary, the battle is just beginning. It was Senator Alexander Wiley of Wisconsin, you remember, who appealed the decision of Chairman Dick Russell of Georgia to the whole investigating committee, only to be voted down yesterday. Late this afternoon, Senator Wiley released a letter, which he has written to Chairman Russell, charging that the committee is not supplying the public with the facts concerning the MacArthur dismissal, and he added, and I quote, "It is the committee majority, the Democrats, which has been partisan in its frantic desire to cover up and whitewash. I hesitate to conclude at this early stage, but I must say that from the way the joint hearings have proceeded thus far, they may end up being considered not only a whitewash, but a washout. I hope that future events may not justify such a conclusion. I am not making these remarks on the basis of any individuals or personalities involved, but solely on the basis of objection to the cover-up tactics thus far condoned by the Joint Committee majority." That's the end of the quote. Wiley's letter was actually the result of some rather extensive conferences among the Republican leaders of the Senate, most of whom are convinced that the administration's strategy in these MacArthur investigations is to try to becloud and confuse the issue as much as possible and to drag out the hearings as long as possible in the hope of boring the public into forgetting the whole thing. They point particularly to the rambling and at times ununderstandable testimony by Secretary of Defense Marshall, who was on the witness stand for 7 days, but who only appeared for a few hours each day. They point also to the interminable deletions by the censor. They point also to the maze of contradictions between the president and the two witnesses who have appeared thus far, including the president's statement to newsmen yesterday that he has been considering firing General MacArthur for a year, and that it was MacArthur's ceasefire statement of March 24th, not his letter to Representative Joe Martin, which was made public 2 weeks later, for which the general was relieved of his command. On that score, General MacArthur shot back a terse and, as usual, direct reply late last night. Inasmuch as it seems to clear the air of some of the dust and the fog, perhaps the best thing to do would be to read it to you in full. Here it is. It's not long. "I have read with astonishment bordering on incredulity the president's press statement today alleging that he felt such dissatisfaction with my exercise of command as to cause him to consider my relief for a full year prior thereto. It is difficult to reconcile this statement with my appointment by him as commander-in-chief of the United Nations command and the number of most commendatory messages he sent me during that period, the last one being as late as the past January, as well as the number of public statements made by him to the same effect. I had no slightest inkling of any such dissatisfaction from the president or from anyone else until the receipt of my order of relief as regards my message to the veterans of foreign wars with reference to Formosa. I had long previously furnished copies of a memorandum of similar import to the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the President's personal representative then in Japan, without having received the slightest dissent therefrom. Subsequent policy statements indicated that the administration is in accord with the views I therein expressed on Formosa. It is of interest to note that the president now appears to justify my relief primarily upon my efforts to secure a ceasefire agreement from the enemy commander in the field, just as I had done twice before, without conferring with higher authority and without the slightest exception being taken thereto. Such action on my part could only be regarded as supplementary to and in full support of any political move toward peace, unless an agreement was in contemplation on the enemy's own terms. That is the end of the MacArthur statement, and it left the White House once again far, far out on the end of a limb. If it was true, as the President stated yesterday, that he has been considering the recall of General MacArthur for a full year, why was it that 10.5 months ago he placed the general in command of the Korean expedition? And why, only 8 months ago, after the successful Incheon landing, did the President issue public statements about the brilliance of General MacArthur's performance and leadership? So today, the White House Secretary Joe Short told newsmen that once again, the President did not mean what he said. That's getting to be something of a habit, indeed. He said Mr. Truman did not intend to be speaking in exact and specific terms, but in generalities, and that he did not actually mean a year, which is what he said, but only since the incident involving General MacArthur's letter to the National Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Chicago last year. That, said Mr. Short, was, in the corrected version for public consumption today, was when the President began thinking that he needed a new general in the Far East, all of which still doesn't hold any water, because it was on August the 28th that the President ordered the message to the Veterans of Foreign Wars withdrawn, and it was 2.5 weeks later that he issued his glorifying statement, glowing praise about MacArthur on the occasion of the Incheon landing. The White House made no effort to explain the general statement that on two prior occasions he had issued similar statements directed at the enemy high command calling for a ceasefire order, and on neither of those occasions did he receive the slightest word of criticism from Washington, but on this third time, that is the reason for his dismissal, which seems to call for an answer, and in the absence of one, the only possible conclusion is that there is no answer. In the meantime, whatever may be the administration intentions of trying to whitewash the MacArthur incident and the Senate investigation, if any, there begin to appear indications that it's not working. In St. Louis today, Democratic Senator John McClellan of Arkansas made a speech denouncing the administration policy in the Far East and elsewhere in most vigorous terms, saying that it is shameful for us as a nation to continue to tolerate the policies of permitting Great Britain to supply critical materials to communist China to use against our own men. He said the administration's theory is that we cannot afford to offend our friends and that we must hold on to our allies. Senator McClellan of Arkansas said, "Of course we want allies and friends, but what we need are allies that are an asset, not allies that are a liability. If we are going to surrender every principle, everything that is at issue on the diplomatic front, then it is a crime against humanity to continue the sacrifice of lives and treasures which we are making on the battlefront." End of quotes. That from a Democrat. And from the rock-ribbed Democratic state of Texas, whose own Senator Tom Connally is chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and has been one of the chief champions of President Truman for his dismissal of General MacArthur, one of the chief champions always of British-accented Secretary of State Dean Acheson, from that rock-ribbed Democratic state of Texas came interesting clues as to how the wind is blowing. The Houston Chronicle, one of the outstanding papers of the Democratic South, beginning last Sunday, started a poll among its readers. There were two questions. First, do you favor the MacArthur program for Korea? Second, do you favor the Marshall program for Korea? The poll, mind you, came after General Marshall's testimony had been given to the Senate Investigating Committee and after the public had full opportunity to hear both sides of the question and make up its mind. Indeed, if there was any advantage on either side, it was on the side of General Marshall because he had had the last say and his arguments were the fresher in the public mind. The editor of the Houston Chronicle, Mr. R.K. Watts, told me this afternoon that the response is the largest ever received in answer to any poll or anything else in the history of that great newspaper. There have been more than 10,000 signed responses, and it was found necessary to continue the poll throughout the entire week instead of ending it on Wednesday as originally planned. Furthermore, it was necessary to begin printing not one, but several ballots in each edition because subscribers were calling in and saying that several people in the family wanted to vote. Now, how did it come out? Mr. Watts informed me that the total returns to date, in the total returns to date, more than 90% of them favor the MacArthur program in Korea. 9-1, and that in the deep Democratic South. Now, I'll have more news for you in just half a minute.
Just a word to the young women of America. Have you heard about the excellent opportunities for advancement in the expanding Women's Army Corps? Enterprising young women who can qualify are urged to enlist now, and you know every day more young women are finding out the full details about job openings in the Women's Army Corps. So visit your nearest United States Army and United States Air Force recruiting station. Have a talk with a recruiting sergeant. He'll be glad to give you all the information. Again, Mr. Lewis in the news.
In Congress, the Joint House-Senate Committee that's been trying to work out a compromise on a late appropriation bill agreed to keep a provision which was written into it in the Senate under the sponsorship of Senator Querrey of Nebraska and Kim of Missouri, which would outlaw any form of United States economic aid to any nation that knowingly permits exports of arms or critical materials from that country to any communist country. The House and Senate are expected to vote approval of that bill, with the provision included, on Monday, thus putting it up to President Truman. It's going to be a tough one for him to swallow, however, because the big power at the State Department doesn't like it and has said so. If Mr. Truman wants the money in the bill, however, he has to take the Werry Kim Amendment along with the money. If it becomes law, every nation to whom we give economic aid of any kind would have to formally certify to this nation within 15 days that an absolute embargo had been placed by it on a specific list of items prescribed by the Secretary of War for shipment into any communist countries. Otherwise, no more free lunch from Uncle Sam. The United Nations General Assembly finally approved today, 45-0, the so-called moral embargo on shipments of arms, ammunition, implements of war, materials that can be used in making implements of war, and petroleum to Red China. Russia and the satellite nations refused, of course, to go along. So did India, as usual. And so did 9 other countries. There are no teeth in the action. Any nation that wants to ignore it, even among those countries who voted for it today, may do so, which suggests the futility of the whole idiotic business. But that's where the world is being run at the present time, like success, and if you feel that moral responsibility is somewhat inadequate in, as a control over the communist conspiracy that has never honored a single promise or commitment in the history of its existence, you're a dirty, stupid bumpkin, a lout, and a nationalistic conspirator. What's more, you're undermining the foreign policy of your nation. Mr. Truman said so yesterday. Or maybe he didn't mean that either. And you're guilty of placing the United States ahead of the United Nations organization. And if all that is so, just come on over and sit down beside me, because I think you're swell. That's the top of the news as it looks from here.
You've been listening to Fulton Lewis, Jr., Mutual's reporter on national affairs, in his regular nightly analysis of the day's news. Mr. Lewis spoke to you this evening from the nation's capital.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.